Rebag, your premier destination for luxury resale. Elevate your style with our curated collection of bags, watches, and fine jewelry. At Rebag, quality is our priority. Each piece meticulously vetted and verified by experts, ensuring your investment is nothing short of perfection. Buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Hermes, Chanel, and Cartier. Access expertly crafted and hard-to-find pieces that redefine luxury. Your next investment awaits at Rebag. Get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. That's 10% off the luxury you deserve. Don't miss out. Head to Rebag.com and enter code REBAG10 at checkout. That's REBAG10.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to the Irish Country Living Podcast.
Hello, and welcome back to the Irish Country Living Podcast. I'm your host, Anne O'Donoghue. Some of you may know that Irish Country Living has a sister publication called Irish Country Magazine. It's a glossy magazine that comes out 7 times a year. This week's guest on the podcast is someone that I actually interviewed for the current edition of Irish Country Magazine that's on shelves, Deborah Sommer. Deborah Sommer is a social entrepreneur among many, many other things. I first met Deborah actually when she was on The Cutting Edge with former editor of Irish Country Living, Mairead Lavery, and I was so struck by her as a person and everything that she's achieved and done. Deborah was homeless at 13 and pregnant at 14 with her son. She raised her son while going to school, did her leaving, she went to college and became a chartered accountant. She worked in PwC and recently moved to EY, another top accountancy firm, and is now working in their people advisory services. The list of things that Deborah has done and achieved is very long, but just to give a little flavour, she was on Forbes 30 under 30 list in the social entrepreneur category. She also has her own charity called Empower the Family, and they provide student accommodation and just in general support people from disadvantaged areas to go to college. So enjoy the chat. Congratulations on the new role in EY.
Thank you so much. I'm really enjoying it. I think the biggest thing for me is at EY, like, culture isn't really a buzzword. You know, it's really something they put their money where their mouth is, where that is, and it's so important. So I'm really enjoying it, and I feel like just 9 weeks, I feel such a sense of belonging and inclusion here, which is really lovely. Yeah, loving it.
And loads going on with you, from new jobs and everything. With Empower the Family, Deborah, there's a great development at the moment. But for anybody listening who hasn't heard of Empower the Family, how would you explain it to them?
So basically, the simple way that I would explain it to them is we are trying to help people. We're trying to give people a helping hand out of poverty, essentially, and we're trying to do that in a way that empowers them, and we're trying to create a bridge between social housing and student housing and affordable housing. So very simply, you are much more likely to grow up in poverty in Ireland. This is just from our own CSO statistics. You're much more likely to grow up in poverty in Ireland if you don't have a degree. And the problem is then the community you live in, that you'll live in, there's a much lower progression rate for people to get a degree in comparison to living in a community where lots of people have degrees, and that's the only place you can afford because you don't have a degree and you can only get a low paid job, right? So how do you get out of that situation? Well, it's quite difficult. You go on the social housing list to try and get a house, but really you're at the mercy of that list, and that's what we're seeing the consequences of now in terms of homelessness and high rent and support to pay. But if you're someone that doesn't have a degree, unfortunately, your options are limited in terms of a higher paying job to be able to buy a house and go and buy a house yourself instead of relying on social housing. So what we're doing is looking at the people. There's lots of people in disadvantaged communities all over Ireland who have the determination, have the ability to get through university, but simply have certain barriers there, like accommodation or childcare, or even just having a support network of people that believe in you, that mean either they don't end up going to college or they might end up dropping out in first year. And what we're trying to do is we're trying to support people, particularly single parents and young people coming out of state care who are going to college, and by giving them those things, accommodation and childcare. And we'll have a creche on site, we'll have a community centre, so it's inclusive, we'll have mentor programmes, we'll have a community manager that's there to support the young people there. We're trying to put those things in one place that can help someone who has come from a disadvantaged background to succeed in university. So not just the things that will create physical safety, but also psychological safety. So even we're doing our strategic workforce plan at the moment, and we're looking at, okay, well, how can we offer grinds? You know, what is the staffing structure we can put in place there? What is the funding structure we can put it behind that to make sure we have a fund there for people to dip into if they do need to get grinds closer to exam time? You know, just those types of things. And I know for me anyways, when I was in college, I was always so jealous of my friends who could afford those things. Or even when I was doing my accounting exams, like they could just afford to pay 600 euro and go on a revision course or whatever. I just didn't have that money. Like, I just didn't. And another thing we're looking at as well. So really funnily, like, there's obviously so many jobs that end up being high paid, but at the start when you're training, it might be really low paid. So then it becomes kind of a negative coming off social welfare, because you're going to be worse off for the first few years, you know, working. So what we're looking at as well is, well, if it's someone who is going to do like a training program of some sort, to say, for example, it's accounting or it's being a solicitor or something like that, they can stay there with us until they actually complete that whole qualification. So that those first couple of years where their income is really, really low, they don't feel worse off, if that makes sense, and they're empowered to get their qualification and move out at a point where they're able to stand on their own two feet. We have one of the big things in terms of who we are and how we run ourselves is never make anyone homeless. So nobody would be moving out of us to a homeless accommodation. They'd all get appointed an aftercare worker, and that aftercare worker would help them find their own accommodation once they're ready to move out then, and their own apartment. Or realistically, ideally, we would hope that for some of the people who move into us, especially with all of the government's plans around the affordable housing scheme, that we would be able to support them. Maybe that support of having that there might give them the space to save up for a deposit while they're with us. And maybe they'd be able to move out and buy their own affordable home in their own community then, you know? So the first place we're currently hoping to... our first location we're hoping will be in North Dublin in Ballymun. I don't know why I said that so weird. We're hoping it'll be in Ballymun, and Ballymun is a place that's very close to my own heart for a number of reasons. Not only did I grow up, you know, hanging around there with my own friends, but and a lot of my friends from my school went to Margaret Aylward's in Whitehall, which is a really disadvantaged school just down the road from DCU, like literally down the road. And you know what always baffled me about that, and I suppose it's definitely those experiences that have shaped what I'm doing now, was that, say, for example, my school was really, really disadvantaged. And I think I told you about this last time we talked about how, you know, this teacher had mentioned to me that I should do fourth year instead of fifth year, because I was probably not going to do my leaving cert because I had a kid. And that didn't come from a bad place. That simply came from her own lived experience of teaching there for a really long time and seeing the progression rates to university. As I said, as far as I'm aware, I'm the only person from my class to go to university straight after school. She certainly didn't think there was the girl who grew up in care, who was a single mom, who was going to do it, you know. But those are the kids you write off, you know, usually in class. They're not the kids who will go off and achieve something. And that was always really weird to me. But then the other thing being my friends. You know, DCU was nearly like something we walked through, as opposed to something where people realized this is the next stage. This is like, if we want to do well in life, we want to have our own money to do whatever we want and be independent, this is where we need to go to.
But you didn't feel at the time, Deborah, that you were part of that kind of community.
No, and it's not necessarily that they did anything to exclude us. It's just that for my friends, they saw it as extra school. So they would say to me when I was in college, oh God, I feel so sorry for you. You have to do extra school. And I'm like, what? And that was just the difference, because there's nobody in their entire family generate. And this is what made me need to look into it, because I was like, what is going on here? Like, I don't understand why people aren't more from the community I grew up in, weren't more motivated to go to college. And you start to understand that nobody for generations in that family has ever gone to college. They don't have role models. They don't necessarily have people in their community that are visible, highly visible, who've gone off and done that, who weren't like getting all A's or something in class. You know, just someone who skipped away, goes off, does his business course, ends up in a bank somewhere. Don't really have that, you know. So it's really important for me to create those role models, and I hope everybody else is committed to doing that in whatever spaces they are. But for me in particular, because I felt like I was being put on a pedestal when I came out with my story, and I didn't like that. I didn't like that I was being like, what I did was being made to seem like some sort of mythical thing, or if you just put your head down, maybe the mythical is the wrong way, where if you just put your head down, everyone can achieve that kind of thing. And it's like, sorry, no, there's a million barriers there for people who come from advantaged backgrounds that you can't even imagine, can't even begin to think of. So it's not as easy for people to do that. So creating those role models that go back to those communities and inspire other disadvantaged kids to want to go to university, to consider this other option, to consider going to the DCU open days and not seeing them as extra school, means everything to me, you know. And yeah, it's something I'm really, really proud of, because I think it's really going to make a difference in Ireland. And the thing is, when you in Ireland, right, when you look at the history of this, initially we had I think what we have now is simply just like a consequence of colonization, in my opinion. So when you look at when the English were here and they had hedge schools, and where it was like illegal for Catholic kids to go to school, absolutely disgusting. Like, I don't understand how that was. So you look at that, and that was the first way that disadvantaged communities were excluded from the education system. And then the Catholic Church came in and took it over, and we all know what happened with that. And people were just trying to get out of school as quickly as possible, you know, to get out of that. But even when you look at third level, then first of all, it was ridiculously expensive. It was really prohibitive cost. But the other thing was, you know, Trinity, which is what our oldest university in Ireland, didn't let in Catholics, you know. So there was this thing. And then even when they did let in Catholics, then the Catholic priests were like, oh, you can't go there because Protestants go there. So you can understand. And, you know, education hasn't been free for decades and decades and decades in Ireland. You know, it's a fairly new thing to have education being free, particularly third level being free, or relatively free anyways, in comparison to other countries, as I see it anyways. So I think this is the natural, where we're at, is this is the natural thing that needs to happen to be able to fix the historical
barriers to education.
Exactly, the historical barriers to education that have existed there. You know, it's going backwards and trying to develop innovative approaches that it aren't one size fits all approaches, you know, that take into consideration that people will have different needs, and is service user led. I think a lot of initiatives and community development initiatives, I think they fail because they don't ask the service user, what do you need? They'll just tell the service user what they'll have and what they need, and if that doesn't work for them, then, well, let's just write those people off, you know. They're not committing to it. So yeah, that's my opinion on that. Sorry, kind of controversial.
And Deborah, just when you were saying it there earlier, you were saying that I suppose when you went to college and, you know, you did your accountancy exams and everything, you didn't like the idea you were kind of held up as this poster girl, and you didn't want it to seem as, oh, it's so easy for people to do that. Do you think your own experience, you were speaking there about being user led, do you think your own experience helped informed this whole process of Inspired the Family and going towards making student accommodation more accessible for people?
Oh my, yeah, it's the whole experience completely is fed into why I started Empower the Family, how I run Empower the Family, even how we make decisions as a board. Our end user, our service user, our future residents are at the core of everything and every decision that we make, even down to the design of the apartment units. So I joke that, like, when I was studying for my exams when I was in college, I was always worried I was going to get done for child abandonment. And my son was just in the sitting room and I was in the kitchen. But you'd have like, you know, an hour or 2 hours, you're just head stuck in a book and you unfortunately have to blank them in front of a TV because it's exam time. You've exams and TV for a million and one subjects to get through. And we've taken things like that into consideration design of the apartment units to make sure that there is a study room right beside the kids' room. So you can open the door and you're able to, you know, look in at them. They can have a little setup with some toys there and stuff like that. So yeah, and trying to take into consideration those challenges that single parents will naturally have when they're trying to go to college. And that's based on the challenges that I had, you know, but not just me, also taking into consideration the research there and other voices, make sure we're not just designing something that would work for me, that's really important. So say, for example, we, as well as having a really incredible board of directors with a lot of great experience on it, we've just started a volunteer program with UCD Students Union. So we have about 25 to 30 people on that volunteer program. And those people are helping us, whether it's from our deciding our fundraising strategy or even the strategic workforce planning that I'm talking about. So again, you're bringing a bunch of diverse voices and different voices into that process to make sure that whatever you're doing is fit for purpose. You know? So yeah, absolutely, my experience fed into it, and it will and the end service user is always going to be at the core of everything that we do.
And Deborah, just in terms of your own experience, at what point did you know that education was going to be so important in your life? Did you always know that you wanted to go onto third level, that you wanted to do your accountancy exams? When did that come into play for you?
So, like, you know, I definitely credit my mom. And they say, like, you know, your early influences from when you're like a kid, when you're like two or three or whatever, that's when like your personality and stuff is being formed. I don't know. My mom, education was always really, really important to her. But especially that, okay, if she didn't finish her education and she didn't get the best education, we were at least going to. She was going to do everything to make sure that we could. And, you know, I'd say that when I was put in a situation where, say, for example, like for second year, I lived in Cork, but nobody had thought to arrange a school for me before I moved to Cork. And none of the schools would take me because it was mid-cycle when I moved there, or at least started the year it started or something. I can't remember. But either way, I didn't do second year of school. I just haven't done it. And that whole year, every meeting I had with a social worker, I was like, can I have a school? Have you found me a school yet? Like, just those types of things. So I think it wasn't until it was taken away from me that it became something I made sure I really fought to make sure I had. But then I suppose when I got pregnant with my son, it brought a different level of focus as well. Like, I would say, yes, it became important to me, but not as important as it did after I had my son. And I would say after I had my son, there was a new focus of there is a human being that is relying on me and I'm all he has. So I needed to make sure I got that education. So if I wanted to provide a life for him that was better than the one I'd had, that was the only way I was going to do it. So it became very important to me for that reason. I think it can open up a lot of doors for you and completely change your life. So absolutely, it is very important to me, and it's very important that as many people as possible understand how important it can be and how transformational it can be in your life.
And Deborah, you were 14 when you had your son Liam, am I correct?
Yeah, I was indeed.
Was it a struggle between, like, was it difficult? Obviously it was difficult, but how did you get through raising him and going to school all at the same time and doing that all together on your own?
Yeah, it was.
Were you in care at the time?
Yeah, it was really, really hard. So I grew up in this. So after I moved out of the homeless hostel I was living in when I was 14, I moved into this other, into a care home called Dunan Oak in Drumconjun. It's run by really incredible, lovely people. And when I first moved in, you know, I was arms folded, Air Max tracksuit, big hoop earrings, thought I was, you know, knew everything. And, you know, they just kept trying. They just kept trying to break through to me. And they do that for every kid that comes in. They'll try and show you that people care about you here and people care about you doing well. And within a few months of living there, I ended up getting pregnant. It was not their own fault. I was just looking for love in all of the wrong places. And when I went and told the manager of the care home, he ended up going and asking the owners if they would convert it into and I'm sorry to use the term, but still the term that's used in care is mother and baby homes. And he asked them if they would convert the purpose of it to one where basically I could stay with my baby. And they own two homes, so they could, not that that mattered, because especially with private residential care, it ends up being a money-making business. So you know you're probably going to lose money converting it to, you know, something that's more niche than something that's mainstream, you know. So they had another house that was for mainstream kids, and they ended up having a house for mother and babies. And there I learned how to be a mom. I learned how to juggle being a mom with school for the first few years. They used to give me like 8 hours babysitting a week, 7 or 8 hours, I can't remember exactly what it was, but it was 7 or 8 hours. And I could use that time then to study or to get a little bit of extra sleep if I needed to. Say, for example, if Liam got his needles, you know, the night before, you know, I could just drop him down to get 1 or 2 hours sleep before school. And those things made a huge difference, to be completely honest with you, in terms of my ability to get through college. Or yeah, to be honest, because it was like for the first couple of years I had training wheels, I had people supporting me. So when I moved out when I was 18 and I had to go and kind of stand on my own 2 feet, it just wasn't really daunting for me, because I'd had that help. But initially I didn't want any help. Initially I was like, I can do this all myself. But I very quickly realized I needed sleep, so I accepted the help. But it was hard, but it was great to have the support to teach me how to do it in the right way.
And Deborah, I've spoken to you quite a few times now. I don't think I want to actually accurately get across how amazing it is and how influential you are to have done all these things and to have gone on to start Empower the Family. At what stage did you start to share your own story? Did your peers know when you were in school or when you were in college that
Absolutely not. It wasn't something I shared, because and you know, one thing, like before I decided to share my story, because it's the craziest thing to want to put out there, obviously, especially when you work in a super conservative industry. But what felt like maybe a year before I came out with my story, my friends were telling me that I was going insane, because I was getting really frustrated by the housing crisis and how people were talking about it and the homeless crisis. And so for them, they were just like, why are you so like stressed out about this? Why are you so fired up about it? And I was never really passionate about social issues before, to be completely honest with you. So my friends just didn't understand where it was coming from. And I would say that even say things like listening to a radio show where there's this one girl they had who was a teenager, and she was living in homeless accommodation with her mom, and she was telling her experience of what it was like living in homeless accommodation and how you don't tell anyone because you're worried they'll think you're smelly or dirty or something. And it's just deja vu. I just remember like crying listening to those interviews and even the mom interviews, and just remembering like just seeing that how my mum was broken by the experience of going through homelessness herself. So I think, you know, I didn't share it with people because I was really embarrassed at the time. But when Focus Ireland, as I said, a year before I started sharing my story, I was going insane for that year. But Focus Ireland reached out to me and they asked me if I would share my story for them to help them raise funds for the homeless crisis. Of course, I said yes. Actually, no, sorry, that's a lie. Initially, I said, I don't know. And I had to think about it, because to be completely honest with you, the idea that I was, especially for kids in care, you try to leave stuff behind you when you're 18. You try and close that door behind you. You're having a new life now. This is a fresh start. Well, particularly for me, most of my friends in the previous place I worked had gone to private schools or had grown up in two-parent family homes. So I didn't even want to tell them I was poor, never mind that I used to be homeless or that I grew up in care. I really didn't want to share that stuff with people. But the first time I did it was in this it was supposed to be this small group of women, you know, speaking for 10 minutes and that was it. So I was like, right, okay, fine, I'll do that, because if it can make an impact and if it will help the women in that room view the homeless crisis in a different way, in a more empathetic way, in terms of this could be someone who works somewhere like yours, then I'll do it. And I did that first event, and I think, I don't know if I said it to you, I probably did, like, it had such an impact, and they raised a lot of money on the back of that talk, and it was such an emotional experience that I felt like I would be super selfish if I didn't try to share my story in places where I felt it could have an impact. It's not just about going and telling it everywhere, and I don't, I'm super selective about it. To say, for example, like, I wouldn't really do it. It's very unlikely I'll do it for a private school, you know. I'm more likely to do it for a disadvantaged school, and I've done way more talks with disadvantaged people. They roped me into doing it for my son's school, so that's the only private school I end up doing it for. But otherwise, I try and talk about it in spaces where I can have an impact on the kids I'm telling it to, or the adults I'm telling it to. And I do feel like, I weirdly feel like I've had that impact. I really feel like I do have that impact, and I feel so lucky to get the opportunity to share my story with people I'm getting to share my story with. Like just to even give you something really simple, it's such a funny story. So I done this talk for DTU's access program. They did this TY Awards thing in the Helix every year. And they run, essentially what they do is they run transition year programs in disadvantaged schools in North Dublin, then they do an award ceremony to bring them into Helix. And again, it's part of their whole getting you excited for college. So, and I suppose even just to pick up on that for a second, the thing is, unfortunately, with people who have kids or people who are coming out of care, there's a bit of dampening of expectations that when a push comes to shove, they kind of have to do, because they can't build houses, they can't build a garage for someone's kid to go to. So, and they can't do it in a way that's unaffordable for them, you know, for both. So we very much so support the offering that they have there anyways, and we will support the offering that they have there in such an impactful way, and that's something I'm really excited about. Sorry, so just to circle back, when I was asked to speak at that transition year awards program, and the next day I was on the bus, and I live in North Dublin, and I live just beside Darndale, and two lads got on at Darndale and in their school uniform. And like, this was obviously a while ago, pre-COVID anyways. And I was doing my makeup in the seat behind them. And one of the lads had been at the talk the day before, and he was telling his friend, he obviously didn't pick up on the fact that I was sitting behind him. He was like, yeah. And she dropped out of school before she did her leave. And then she went back after she had a kid, and she done a whopper. And now she's working in some big fancy place in town and all. And right, so what do you think you're going to do if you're leaving, sir? And the thing is, right, It's the fact that they had that conversation, and then they went, right, so what are you thinking? What points do you think you'll need then? That's the impact.
Is that success for you?
That is success for me. If I can get even just having one person think that way, that is success for me. It's all I wanted to do. And similarly, in terms of how people view the homeless crisis, we did this homeless hackathon in PwC, and I not only did I speak at it, I organized panels for it and all that, and content and stuff for it. And one question I asked at the end of it was like, you know, and it's a 3-day event, but it's like for every single person there raised their hand at the end in terms of their perception of the homeless crisis had completely changed from Friday to Sunday, you know, based on hearing the real stories of what people went through. Like, there's one lad who was in college, who was in homeless accommodation the whole time he was in college. He did a biomedical engineering degree or something like that in UCD and came out with a first. He was in homeless the whole time he was doing his degree. And not like in a B&B, like couch surfing, like all this kind of stuff. So, and then he'd like work to support himself. I'm like, how do you do that? How do you mentally psych yourself up for that? Because it's very depressing living in that situation where you don't know where you're going from day to day. And even if you think of something as simple as Maslow's hierarchy of needs, you need security before you can do anything else, before you can start trying to accomplish anything else. So I think that's the difficult thing that doesn't come across to people until they try and put themselves in that shoe of, Jesus, what would I do if I was in that situation? Jesus, that would be really hard. Okay, I need to help. As opposed to thinking it's all drug dealers or people who have done something to put themselves in that situation. It's just that change in in how we see that crisis and how we see the people who end up in that situation was what was really important to me, and was trying to have an impact on that.
And say, Deborah, even after you went on the Late Late Show, I think that was around the time you launched Empower the Family, did people say to you that you had kind of changed the face of homelessness, and that you had made, as you said, brought that new element to it, and, you know, as you said, made it real to people?
Yeah, exactly. It was seeing and hearing that feedback from people about how much it changed their opinion of people who grew up in homelessness, you know. And I think in particular, that was when I decided, the day I did the Late Late Show was the day I decided to start Empower the Family, because that weekend, because for me, I could see how much of an impact it had, and I felt a huge amount of imposter syndrome, to be completely honest with you, that all I was doing to help the kids that were like me, that I'd grown up with, was going around talking about myself, and I didn't think that was fair. And I really would love that next time I'm actually, like, I'm just in the audience watching three other people kind of sharing similar stories of ending up working in these, you know, getting these, having these really successful paths in life, and being able to stand on their own two feet and be independent, but thanks to people believing in them and helping them, you know. So there was that element of wanting to do more, but then there was also seeing how much of an impact it had on people and how much of an impact the story had on people, that motivated me to try to do more in this space. And I wish all I'm trying to do is create more of me, to be completely honest with you, not specifically me, but just more people who have come through tough times and who succeed at the end of it, more success stories, as opposed to pockets of people who society where we have people who feel forgotten and feel left behind, you know, and just trying to bring everyone on that journey.
Well, that's really kind of, it's becoming a reality, as you said, you're getting closer and closer to the accommodation up by DCU.
Yeah.
What's your dream for Empower the Family? What would you like to see?
One in every county in Ireland but a university. So say after we do Dublin, then I'll be looking at Cork. After we do Cork, then we'll be looking at Waterford. And, you know, it's about trying to make sure, what we're trying to do is, it's social equality, it's social inclusion. We're trying to make sure that people who come from disadvantaged backgrounds have just as much of a chance to succeed as anybody else. And so naturally, something like this shouldn't just be in Dublin. It should be in every county where there's university, because if people who can afford to go to college can go, then people who can't afford should be able to go, and they should have a way to be able to do that. So that's our end game. And I suppose we don't necessarily need to do that all ourselves. We're definitely thinking about ideally putting together some sort of development pack that we can hand over to a university. So hand over to a UCC or something, for example, and say, if you want to roll this out on campus and, you know, reserve a couple units for this is the pack. This is what you need to have in there. This is what makes it work. And so we want to try and make sure we have data around things like that. So say, for example, one of our big things is a KPI around an 80% graduation rate, you know, and you're measuring the impact then you're having in people's lives. You're helping people ensure they're graduating with a degree from a third level institution. Huge in terms of the impact. And I see it as a threefold impact. You're impacting, particularly for single moms, you're impacting the single mom by changing her life and helping her be able to earn more money, and you're impacting the child's life, and because you're putting them in an environment with a positive association with education early on, and you're impacting the communities that single mom grew up in, because you're now creating a role model. So I see it as threefold, that impact. And I think I would love us to do that all around the country. But yeah, that's the long term plan from Empower the Family.
Well, Deborah, I can't wait to see how people who have you helped, how they get on. I can't wait to see what else you do. As the lads on the bus said, you done whopper. That's very true. So thank you very, very much for coming on to speak to me today.
Thank you so much for having me, Anne. Thank you.
The Irish Country Living Podcast.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.